Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Betches Media presents.
Madam Speaker. Madam Vice President.
You want to hang out with us? Get your vaccine. Vaccine.
And so I went to Human Resources.
There are some things I just can't tell you on air.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
A woman's problem, if you will.
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Sammy Sage.
I'm Caitlin Bird.
And this is the Betches Sup Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. Apologies, I have a new Invisalign in today and it hurts too much to take out to record. So I'm going to be a little lispy today.
Oh, wow. That's exciting.
It is. I have this one. They've never hurt so bad that like I actually don't want to take it out to like eat and do the podcast. But this one's rough. This one's it hurts to fix your teeth.
Oh, for sure.
Not yes. fun.
Not fun. Yes. But I'm almost done and it works and it has been worth it. But I was just talking to Sammy before today's show about, and I mentioned this to Caitlin, that I'm feeling a little low lately. I'm feeling a little hopeless with the pandemic and these Republicans and how we can't all agree on facts and climate change and all of it. That I think that I'm not good at like pursuing my own joy. I just wait for things around me to become good and happy. And in case there are others like me who need to change that, what's been bringing you guys some joy lately? What have you been doing like just purely out of joy? Caitlin, what have you been doing?
Oh, man. Well, I...
reading Civil War tomes?
I mean, besides reading Civil War tomes, I left my previous full-time job and now I'm making writing my full-time job.
That's joyful.
Text and commentating. I have to say it's the most like, it's just like so incredibly fun. And
really?
It's like, yes, it is a job. And I remind myself that all the time because I'm just like, oh, I want to, I have thoughts about this thing. And that's like, wait, that's my job now. And it is pursuing what I really want to do is probably one of the most enriching experiences that I've had. We'll see how it goes after because now I'm heading into savings territory. We'll see what happened, how I feel after I start spending money.
I'm glad we touched on this because for listeners to the podcast, how can they support you? What type of writing are you looking to get hired to do? Is it just writing? Or are you doing like political consulting? What are you looking to get paid to do?
Well, the big way to support me would be the Patreon. I basically have specific writing for each tier once a month. That's just like out of my thoughts, options to kind of get more like pitch ideas to me and get thoughts that way.
Cool.
I just started a column with Dame Magazine. So that's going to start next month and I'll be writing monthly for them. And I've got this big
awesome
topics I can do.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be like delving into a lot more stuff because now I have time.
And as a Patreon subscriber, I can assure you it's worth it. So
it's definitely worth it.
Hit that Patreon.
Yeah. And remember that Patreon and like stuff like that, it's always like, even if I hope that you read, I subscribe to, I don't always read, but it's just a good way to like support people who give you free content all the time. Like throw them a couple bucks every month, even if you might not read the newsletter or whatever they're putting out. Like, trust me, Caitlin's, you probably will, but it's worth checking out just to support people making stuff for free. Sammy, what are you doing for fun lately?
I'm walking through Central Park to go to dinner.
That's very fun.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
So sit outside to see people to, walking outside for some amount of time.
Are you sad that you're moving?
It's like a little bit just like annoying, but honestly, like I don't mind. I like a new environment. I do feel that this this hotel, this apartment has pandemic vibes and pandemic energy. And I would like to not be in that anymore. So, I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. I've been like looking forward to going back into the office just because it's like something to, people say having things to look forward to is like what keeps you from getting depressed. But I think that can also mean like literally something that I have to do in the forward times, like even having to go to the office a couple times a week or whatever I end up doing, I cannot wait just to see people, not like get dysphoric because I realize I haven't talked for 2 days.
Right. Well, good thing you host a podcast.
I do. Yeah.
You're forced to talk.
I know. I take it for granted. I agree with you, Caitlin. It is like, I take it for granted, but like on days when something really cool and exciting happens, it is very cool that I get to like talk to people I think are interesting and funny about it every single day. That is very cool and very rare.
Right. Yeah. That's like kind of the thing with work. It's like annoying, but it can be good occasionally.
Yeah. That just pays for me to have people to talk to every day about my feelings.
Right. Like exactly.
Pursuing what you want, like even in small ways, like I've recently, my partner and I have gone to museums a bunch recently. We went to the American Natural History Museum this past weekend, and a few weeks ago we went to the Met together, and because everything's starting to open up again, and it's just like getting to like to just go out and just like go and have fun and like look at beautiful art and history and culture. Like this is like why you, for me, it's why I love New York City. And it's just like a great way for us to spend time together. And it's just so much fun to just have those few hours where all you're doing is what you want to do. And if you have a New York City license, or a New York City ID, you can get into most of the major cultural institutions for free. It's all in the city charter. So, any chartered museum that's at, American Natural History Museum, that's the like Botanic Gardens, they're technically supposed to let you in for free if you have a New York ID. So check that out or go to Culture Pass, which again, if you have a New York City library, a New York library card, a Brooklyn library card, or an ID NYC or any New York ID, you can get a Culture Pass and it will let you like get free passes into big cultural sites. So for the
free. That sounds awesome. Yeah, that's great. I feel like now I have my weekend plan.
I think we need to pursue some fun. Like, really think, like, safe, COVID safe fun,
yes,
obviously. But, like, we definitely need to just be, like, pursuing the fun.
Actively. I think, actively. Like, you have to, like, actively plan out what you're going to do week to week to bring a little bit of joy and contentment, because it's not going to just happen out there in the world for us anytime soon.
And you're not just going to make the plan. Like,
no.
In the spontaneous moment, because you're going to be too tired because you just thought about this shit all day. So
I just realized why I never do anything, because I don't make plans, because I'm like, I'll be too tired. But like, you're right. I'm never spontaneously going to like want to go to a museum.
Yeah, no, you must plan in advance and then you have to drop out if you don't.
Okay. I'll do all of those because I'm all the way down. I'm like, do I just have a kid now? Is that what I do?
Oh my
just
God. That's make a new not going to be fun. That's not going to be fun.
It's not going to be fun.
Yeah, no, but also the key to the fun is like really ignoring the other shit while you're having fun and then going back to the other shit when you are not.
That is key. Otherwise, you're just wasting your fun time. For sure.
Totally. Spiral later.
Benefit of both Met and the Natural History Museum is that they're off of Central Park.
So yes.
You can like walk through the park or you could go get like some brunch, some dinner, whatever you want, and then wander into the park to get to your next destination.
Beautiful. And all the museums in DC are free, mostly. All the Smithsonian ones, you just walk in.
All the Smithsonians.
People don't live in a metropolitan area? Though?
They're going to travel to them. We're giving them travel ideas.
Okay, but only if they're not from a COVID hotspot.
Yes. Yeah. There's also like people who do virtual culture tours and whatnot. Like, you know, be open to the experience, but yeah, you know, like get outside.
Get outside, exactly.
I mean, yeah. The nicest way, not in like the touch grass way.
Yes.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Normally, we do stay in New York City on this podcast. In fact, some of you think we do it too much and you let us know. So I thought today we'd turn it around for you and roast New York City a little bit, because I don't know what the actual fuck is going on that so many people in this town, in this country, but in this town, in this state, are not getting vaccinated yet. So this is going to sound good. About 70% of adults in New York City, and that's the five boroughs, have received a single shot, but only about 60% are fully vaxxed. Where it gets especially infuriating is that yesterday Mayor de Blasio announced that city employees would be required to get vaccinated or tested weekly by September. And I believe moments ago, Cuomo said the same thing for state employees.
And Biden's about to say the same for federal.
Right. I heard everybody in the White House is masked again. Masks are back. Fewer than half of all employees at public safety agencies that interact with people haven't gotten even one dose. At some departments, I had to check multiple times. It's so crazy. At the Department of Corrections in New York City, 33% of the workers are vaccinated. I thought you had to get vaccinated to work in the prison. I guess I was wrong. Or the jails. The Housing Authority, 38%. Those people are also interfacing with people constantly. The Department of Sanitation is 40% vaccination rate. And the Department of Homeless Services, the Police Department, and the EMS are all under 50. They're at 47%. I am really struggling to understand why this is. I genuinely don't know why this is, and I want to be compassionate to the, 67% of corrections workers that aren't getting vaccinated, but I'm having some trouble. Theories for what's going on here?
I mean, well, Department of Corrections, I would say it's probably an
not a humane bunch.
Political thing more than... Because the other thing is that a lot of people have a lot of their identities wrapped up in politics. Who could imagine?
Who would do that?
Especially corrections, which, I mean, COVID was brutal, has been, continues to be brutal in our carceral system. And you'd think that that would be an incentive for employees to get that. But at the same time, ideologically, they tend to be more conservative. And because a certain someone made the pandemic a political issue where there are sides, and if you agree with their side, you don't wear a mask and you don't believe in COVID, and your plan is to keep Biden from a win. I guess you from living is a win, so you need to keep Biden from having that.
And you'll die for it.
I kept being surprised for a while, but then again, the Civil War tomes, they teach you a lot about what people think they're willing to die for,
right?
What they're willing to kill for. And a lot of people are like, well, my great grandpappy didn't own slaves. And the same way that you would say, well, why would you do this? You are going to die because of it. They really, owning the libs is the newest iteration of hating Yankees. Okay, it's just, they just hate other people more than they love themselves. There's no other way to explain it.
Actually, that's a very good way to explain it. That's actually the most cogent, succinct explanation for why. That helped me.
Totally. That was really
I was saying to Sammy, and I said this yesterday, and maybe this is the wrong framing, but like, I've been thinking about, like, we're always tossing out statistics about how like 60 to 70% of people agree with feminism, agree that voting is good, agree that immigration is good, agree on all of these things that to me suggests that they're a person with like an ethical point of view. And then I just cannot wrap my mind around where the rest of this hesitancy is coming from, unless it is largely people who, when you look at, so about half of the people that are not vaccinated, I think, Sammy, you said this the other day, say that they will, and they are waiting for full approval. And that group, I believe, is most of like the Black and Latino holdouts who just want to wait for full approval. And then the rest is the white Republican men who are like, I'm not interested. I'm never getting it because
right.
I love Trump.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's also a huge difference when you poll for an opinion. Like, yeah, universal healthcare sounds good. Like, background checks sound great. But this is like counting an action. And it's like a lot different, I think, when people are like, oh, I'm going to go out of my way to get this shot. Like, I know the Biden administration has done a good job of like bringing it closer to people, but like state employees mm-hmm. should be getting it at their workplace. Like, why would you not have that be the case? And then you have like a social pressure thing, maybe, or like a convenience factor or whatever it is. But yeah, I also think we don't necessarily, maybe we underestimate how dumb people are. Like, people are really dumb and really fucking unaware, and they don't like, they're so disengaged that it's all just like whatever background to them. Like, nothing actually means what it means to that, to most people.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think that there's a certain piece of like just disengagement. Some people say that there's still issues with access, which, I mean, if you're talking about people who have childcare issues, people who, like, it's about fitting it in, who don't get sick leave. So like, if you need to take a day or two off to deal with the, because I know I needed
I forgot about a that day part. Off
after I got my second shot. Like, that one knocked me. I'm a young person who doesn't have any existing illnesses, and I'm relatively able-bodied and blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm doing pretty well. And that one knocked me flat on my ass for like a solid day mm-hmm. where I was not feeling great. And I couldn't like work in those conditions, let alone do manual labor. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people who do that kind of stuff don't have the day off to do that. At the same time, there's a certain amount of like, again, it just comes down to like, there are people who want full approval. There are people who are waiting for it to be official in this way that it's never really going to be. And there's a lack of understanding of how vaccines function. There's a lack of understanding, like all of it comes down to like, there's a lot of critical thinking that hasn't been done in our society for a lot of people from the very beginning. And now to try to impose it in adulthood is not going to go well, because they don't have the pieces together to understand like why it's a good idea.
It's so interesting you say that they can't learn in adulthood, because I firmly believe that like many, I don't want to give a number, but many people in the society are just overgrown children running around like in adult Absolutely. Bodies, and they're acting out their bullshit
yes.
via whatever, you know, we're all probably acting out our bullshit, but like some are spreading a pandemic.
But we're not like, these people are literally saying, I don't wanna. And they have no other, they just don't wanna. They just don't wanna.
It's almost like when we were teenagers and we were told by adults to do something and we were like, no, I don't wanna do that.
Oh, 100%. It's defiance.
We didn't have any logical reason. We just didn't want to submit to authority. We were like, if they say it's supposed to be done this way, then maybe they're wrong. Maybe we know better. Maybe, you know, they've been doing it wrong for centuries. And only I, as a 17-year-old, am going to figure yes. out the new and best way of doing this thing.
Yes, and, exactly.
And it's right. like this kind of arrogance that comes through. And normally you'd hope people grow out of that. But maybe, as Sammy said, no one's done that in our society for a while. And the people who should have are often don't face any consequences for not doing the thing they're supposed to. And instead, you know, we socialize risk and we privatize reward. And you do that often enough, people get the message that it's not their problem, you know, if they're not vaccinated. And then, you know, they're asking, can I get a shot while they're on a respirator? And that's the biggest problem, is like, we can't afford the ICU beds. We can't afford the cost on our healthcare system. We can't afford, I feel terrible for healthcare workers who are watching people come in still unvaccinated, need to be ventilated, all of this other stuff. And now there's no excuse. Like before, it was helpless. Like, okay, this was the nature of it. But you've heard from around the country, healthcare professionals say, this feels worse because there's no reason for it to happen anymore. Before, it was out of our control. We understood we were reacting to a real epidemic that couldn't be stopped. Now it can be stopped and people are choosing to let it happen. And that is, that's a choice. That's
Dr. Kathuria was telling us yesterday that's like, when there were these surges before, we were still, a lot of us, in a sort of lockdown. So there weren't as many people on the roads driving. There weren't as many people doing the summer activities where you can get hurt, breaking bones, just doing things that can lead to accidents. So now that is happening on top of these crazy surges, and people are, I feel like this has been clarifying. I feel like it's like a confluence of factors. Like if you can't get the day off and you're going to lose pay and you're going to feel like shit and you have to care for your kids, I can see how convenience would be a pretty powerful reason, which is just makes the case. It's like, bring it to work and everybody should have a free day off. Like
universal health care and sick leave. Like this, we should have been rethinking, like as we've been going through this, we should have been like, okay, so this is the thing that's keeping us from that. It's like, we don't have a universal healthcare system. People are worried they're going to have to pay. People are worried that it's going to
cost. People are so worried they're going to get deported. And They're worried
that their work papers aren't set up. They're worried that they work for cash. They're worried. I mean, everything that you go down, the more economically marginalized you are, the bigger a risk it is to take a day to go take care of a shot when it might cost you 2 or 3 days, depending on your immune system and its response. Mm-hmm. And people upper class can afford that, but people who don't have control over their schedules and work for cash, they can't afford a day off.
Right. I also think there's this other component where, like, we used to have like social pressure to do kind of like the right thing. Now we have, in the place of that, disinformation and misinformation. And to kind of, one thing that maybe could have been prevented or could still be improved is that, like, the communications from, like, anyone who even means well, like, they're not good. Like, all of it is so, was just botched from the beginning in ways that you can't then, like, convince people. Like, there's no way to get the message across, like, if you botched it the first time. And, like, so you have disinformation, like, purposeful. Right. And then you have, like, the people who are trying to spread the good information who are, like, not good at it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, lots of bad factors. It's
being lifted back in April when everybody who was like, wait a second, what? Even as a vaccinated person, I was like, I'm sorry, I'm not taking my mask off. Like, it's one thing to do it outside in a non-crowded space, like walking down the street. It's totally different when you're talking about lots of people together. It's even more different when we're talking about lots of people indoors together. Yeah. Why would you lift mask mandates if you're vaccinated? Now we have to bring them back. And I'm like, well, if we could just have elapsed that entire 4 months, it's possible that right now there would be no Delta variant. We would be much further along on vaccinations and we wouldn't have this problem right now where children are at risk.
Yeah. Well, let me be the CDC's PR woman. What if like they did not know vaccination was going to be this bad? Like, they thought it was going to get to a place or Delta. So is there a case to me? They're like, well, we gave you a chance and had you all gotten vaccinated and had Delta not gotten so bad, you could have still been maskless. Although
they
it's like
honor system for it. And look, we all experienced the same country. Just to point out that January 6th, if you look at that and you're like, I think an honor system on this mask thing is going to work. I think if we just ask people politely to only stop wearing masks if they're vaccinated, it'll all work out. What in the world? Have you lived in America? Where did this idea come from? Where was it developed in, like, in isolation? Were all those people just, like, hanging out in that one room and not allowed to interact with other humans? Because there's nothing about the last year and a half that lets you think, wow, this is a really good idea. I think people are going to be really specific about it. They're going to listen to us in close detail, and they'll only play by these rules if they really believe in them. That's, we've got it, you guys. Perfect idea.
Yes. Woo!
Yeah, I can't. I can't give them credit for that because the obviousness of the bad faith that was going to be met with was so high.
The recommendations never made sense.
No.
You can't like suddenly get them to suddenly make sense. Like they didn't make sense ever.
I mean, the CDC said, and this is also, I think they fall in the category of people who mean well, but it's like they did say at the beginning, you don't need to mask. And that really damaged their credibility to a lot of people because there was like 3 weeks to 6 weeks where we weren't masking when the disease was like really settling in. And granted, not everybody had access to masks, but maybe, I don't know, if they made the announcement and like by the time thousands were, I don't know. I think that they will do a postmortem. Oh, that's not a good choice of words for how they handled this, this rollout.
Maybe it is a good choice.
Maybe it is. So today we're also going to recap and discuss yesterday's first hearing of the House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th insurrection. It's been a really long road to get here, of course. Originally, we hoped the Senate would approve a bipartisan commission to produce a report of a shared set of facts, but Republicans in the Senate filibustered. So here we are in the House. Yesterday, four officers testified about the day they all clearly believed their lives would end when former President Trump sent an angry mob to stop our representatives from verifying the 2020 election. So the purpose of this committee is to find out what was happening at the White House during the hours when the Capitol was breached. And as one officer put it really well, find out like which hitmen sent the killers and how. These people that stormed the Capitol were sent and they were out for blood. So who were they? Who did they believe that they were acting for and why? There are only two Republicans on the committee, Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, but neither were appointed by Republicans. Representative Benny Thompson of Mississippi, he opened the hearing by reminding viewers of the unprecedented attack that took place on January 6th. Let's listen.
The peaceful transfer of power has stood as the pillar of our democracy. It's one of those things we rely on, a safeguard that we hold close, because as heated and angry and divided as we may be, whatever victories we celebrate or upheavals we endure, we can rest easy knowing that when the moment comes, our system guarantees that one party will hand the reins to another if that's the will of the people. And while our institutions endure, and while Joe Biden is the legitimately elected president of the United States, a peaceful transfer of power didn't happen this year. It did not happen. Let that sink in. Think about it. A violent mob was pointed toward the Capitol and told to win a trial by combat.
So notable there is that we did not have a peaceful transition of power. And Sammy, I think you watched a lot of this live yesterday. What were your takeaways? You were like bugging watching it.
Oh my God. I was soothing myself by looking at mansions I'll never be able to afford on Zillow while listening in the background. And I'm like sending them to my mom and they're like literally like $7 million. And I'm like, she's like, that's beautiful. You should watch the hearing. I'm like, I am.
Eileen.
I'm like, don't you just love the style of this house? But while I'm listening to this guy talk about like how he was like tasered multiple times, I'm like, oh, hardwood flooring.
As we said, we have to find ways to self-soothe.
But honestly, so that was like my experience of watching it like the first time. And then later in the day, I watched like the repeat clips and I really watched them. And it was a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, now you all know I Zillow surf things. Like literally I'll be looking at like a $40 million mansion in Aspen. Like it's never going to happen for me.
Zillow surf.
Okay.
I don't. Sammy was trying to tell me, I don't know. I just get too jealous and like, I don't know. It doesn't do anything for me.
But like, once you get to a certain point, it's like, once you are a certain price point, it's like, this is so impossible and also not even necessary that I don't.
Oh,
like, you know what I mean? Like when I'm looking at like an 8-bedroom home, like I will never need that.
It's out of curiosity. It's not out of aspiration.
It's more just like, I want to look at cool houses.
It feels like almost like, again, like a museum, like a wing of a museum where they just recreate like French palaces. You're like, what?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
Or sometimes they're even like really modern and cool. Okay. See, I'm doing it again. My trauma response is that I'm obsessing over homes, and I'm assuming that this is like me feeling insecure. So I'm like focusing on like a home-based thing. So let's go back to the conversation.
You know what? Whenever I'm stressed, I look at dogs to adopt.
Okay.
Because I just want something. And I just said I wanted a baby to take care of. So yeah, I got it. I think I'll start with Zillow.
Okay.
but one of the most impactful, I mean, there were only four officers. And as Sammy said, it was, even people that keep up with this, it was really unbelievable to hear what they went through that day. One thing that was notable is that they referred to the people that stormed the Capitol as terrorists the whole time. And I found that really impactful. So Officer Dunn, who is Black, Officer Harry Dunn, he had worked for the Capitol Police for 13 years. He recounted lots of things. They all gave about 50-minute statements, but he recounted how the terrorists hurled racist abuse at him. I can't believe the balls on this guy, but I guess he said the law that the terrorists came in and they were like, nobody voted for Joe Biden, not one person. And to sort of like take the wind out of their sails, he said to them, well, I voted for Joe Biden. My God.
That's courage.
The courage.
Yeah.
The courage. And so let's listen to what happened then. I want to note that Officer Dunn quotes the epithets used against him, which are very offensive and very hard to hear. So let's listen.
That prompted a torrent of racial epithets. One woman in a pink MAGA shirt yelled, you hear that, guys? This nigger voted for Joe Biden. Then the crowd, perhaps around 20 people, joined in screaming, boo, fucking nigger. No one had ever, ever called me a nigger while wearing the uniform of a Capitol Police officer. In the days following the attempted insurrection, other Black officers shared with me their own stories of racial abuse on January 6th. One officer told me he had never, and in his entire 40 years of life, been called a nigger to his face, and that streak ended on January 6th. Yet another Black officer later told me he had been confronted by insurrectionists in the Capitol who told him, put your gun down and we'll show you what kind of nigger you really are. I sat down on a bench in the rotunda with a friend of mine who was also a Black Capitol Police officer and told him about the racial slurs I endured. I became very emotional and began yelling, how the blank could something like this happen? Is this America? I began sobbing. Officers came over to console me.
It's really striking to think of like, okay, we watched this happen on TV. We watched it unfold and we knew like, that it was very bad. But I think had we had this like very intimate experience with what was actually like happening on the lines of combat, like I hate that I have to use that word, but like it is
that's what they that's how they described it, was like a war zone. One of them, Officer Hodges, said it was like he hadn't even been that scared, or maybe go now in Iraq.
Right. So like, we weren't able to see that until later. And I think that had we been able to see it, maybe things would have been different, or like maybe not, because nothing works. But also what's shocking is that the representatives that night all just like went, and like Lindsey Graham was like briefly done. And that was like, he's like, I'm done. But like that was your reaction to what these officers are describing. Like, you seem fine with it.
Right. That's like what a real housewife does after a fight. Like, I'm done with this. I'm done. I'm leaving.
It seemed like their reactions immediately after, and I guess it took AOC like a week to come on and talk about it, but like the way that they just sort of like went on gave the impression that it wasn't as like serious as it was. But good for them for doing that, I guess.
Because none of them had any choice, I guess.
Well, maybe they were like scared into doing it. Like, oh, we almost lost our government. We need to make sure this happens like immediately.
Well, and I think that they said, I mean, the margins in the House are so small that it's like, they didn't have to kill that many people to like completely change government.
Yeah, one officer did say that.
Tellingly, a huge chunk of people after this completely insane, traumatic, violent event went in and agreed with the aims of the terrorists. Like, they voted to do what the terrorists wanted. Yeah. That is the more the most disturbing detail out of that day to me, is not just the normalization that many Republicans kind of took, where they were like, well, this is very unfortunate, and they made it seem like they weren't almost in mortal danger, but the act of like, well, you know, terrorists are people who commit violent acts for political goals. And they, I mean, that's the technical definition, and are not backed by state governments, right. To be specific. And these people more or less got the state on their side. So that's why I guess they don't think of themselves as terrorists. It's like, if you're a political party that's willing to commit violence in order to achieve your goals, are you terrorists, or is that just how your party functions now?
The latter.
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel the same way you do, Sammy, where I can't help but think, had we known the extent of it on the day, because people weren't paying attention yesterday like they were on that day. I think that Democrats will probably use what these officers said in campaign ads, and I think they should. But like, had we known, like, one of the officer Hodges said that they were trying to gouge his eyes out. They were trying to gouge his eyes out. And then the senators did what they wanted. They did exactly what those people came for. Those people think it was like a success. Like, they probably knew they weren't going to get all the people to do it, even if they couldn't overthrow the government themselves. So
speaking, there were like tourists, and then there were like the militias. Now, when I say tourists, I don't want to use that word. I want to say like
the people that, like, Rep Clyde. So there's this guy yesterday, Rep Andrew Clyde of Georgia, was asked, do you want to stand by when you said it was a normal tourist visit? And he said yes, because he's like, you saw the images of just some people that are Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin has falsely claimed that they were within the ropes. Trump says nobody had guns and it was a love fest, because they're pointing to, like, sure, maybe there were like a couple people. They did have guns. All of this is wrong. I even like struggle with how much of it to say on the podcast, but
it's very frustrating. Yes, that when people were paying attention, all these things weren't known, because now it, to people who don't pay attention, which is most people, and I don't blame them, because it, again, we were just talking about how like much of a how taxing it is mentally. People don't want, they're like, this is painful. I don't want to engage in this. I feel helpless, and there's too many other problems. And then the other side is people who are like, yeah, this was right. Like, let's try to do it again. God. So it's just a really bad storm of circumstances.
Yeah. Caitlin, I know that you're hard to surprise in terms of how terrible Republicans can be, but was there anything that you heard yesterday that like made you think, wow, after hearing that, I actually am surprised that they have continued to deny what happened?
No.
No, yeah.
I mean, the reason for that, I want to be clear. First of all, there's like a certain amount of fatalism that comes with you know, being Black. But the other part is like, this is the history of the country I was raised in. Like, I watched my parents gave me Eyes on the Prize at 3. It was on television when I was 3. And then they just didn't turn the television off and let me continue asking questions. Lynchings, violence, like, this is my childhood. My dad was 8. No, he was about to turn 8 when Martin Luther King was shot in the head. Like, this is that's what was given to me. So I've never been surprised by the level of violence, because my people have been on the receiving end of this the entire time. And that's been that's just what the world was. The world was, those people cannot be trusted. They will try to kill you. I remember watching a video about white supremacists the day I came back from my first tour for my scholarship to some fancy school. And I didn't end up going to that school, but I mean, it's like $35,000 a year, some crazy shit like that. And I was going to go on scholarship, and I came back dressed to the nines, and I turned on the television because it was the first time I had an afternoon free in forever. And there was some show about white supremacists. And I was like, those people hate me and they don't know me. They want me dead. They don't know me. I was 12. That was just the reality of life. So for me, when I saw January 6th, I reacted with, I had a PTSD response. I had a, this is the violence I was warned about. This is the violence I've always experienced. This is where my family, like, this is, to me, I was living in the aftermath of a lynching, and it took me 2 to 3 weeks to work my way out of the PTSD response and get back into a space where I could even be functional.
Right.
So, yeah, I understand how you guys feel, because that response that you guys have, that was the one that I had in the immediate aftermath. And so there's no surprises out of the situation, because I didn't think it was obscured, but it's just because that level of violence has just always been as part of my understanding of the American political system. And so it wasn't an aberration, but more of like a nexus.
Yeah, like Sam and I were surprised to see yesterday just how bad things were, because it seemed inconsistent with something to us. Whereas for you, it, the only consistent thing with everything you would have seen before is what we learned happened yesterday. Like, there was a fucking gallows. I mean,
right. It seemed inconsistent with, I guess, what they showed like at noon that day, you know?
Yeah, Sam and I did like a Instagram live. We were like, isn't this nuts? oh, you mean later yesterday? Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like right as it was like, you know, 2 p.m. or whatever. Yeah, like it's really fucking.
I remember us being on air. Actually,
we were on air. We were on air talking about something else.
Totally different.
We were talking about Georgia.
We were talking about Georgia.
Well, we were talking about like how to warn people about what. Because people were really scared about, remember? People were really scared about January 6th. And we were trying to, we felt like it was our job to reassure them. And then.
Okay, there was an attempted coup.
Yeah.
Like, what the actual fuck? Like,
and they wanted to overthrow the government.
The key to January 6th, the thing that I think we should get out of yesterday that is a bit revelatory is that it almost works, and it's still being done. The coup is not over. It's simply not a represented by a violent mob, but the violent mob's representatives are present and doing the work that is being asked for by that mob. That they are, when Ron Johnson says that, you know, rioters, they weren't rioters, that they were just normal people. Like, that's them doing the political work of keeping them from being accountable, from having us come down on this and treat it like an insurrection, from having everybody who has now accommodated it, supported it, given succor and support. All of these things, you know, are aiding and abetting, you know, the actual violent insurrection and setting up for another as soon as they think they can get away with it.
You know, okay, completely, and they will try again. But one thing that I do think it has maybe shifted for, I'll say for me, but maybe Amanda, you too, is that when I think about my identity as an American, that identity is not the same.
It's not. I actually was like, thinking yesterday when I saw the surfer win, and I just saw, and she was carrying the, I was like, I don't want that flag near me after seeing everything we saw
like
yesterday.
That, like that piece of like, when I say or think I'm an American, that what that means in my head has changed for the worse.
Me too.
So yeah.
Well, Caitlin will ease us in.
Yeah, thanks.
Rate her Patreon, join the club, and the anti-American.
No, it is a very difficult set of feelings to have. At the same time, there are Americans who we can be proud of who have been pushing back this entire time.
Absolutely.
And that's where you get the investment, which is the other story, because there are two Americas. That one had its representation, was fighting against the one that we belong to. And that's where the strength comes from. And that's where the diligence comes from. That's where the pride comes from. It's when you see the best gymnast in the world, you know, have a mistake and then decide that the best thing that she can do is make the sacrifice of her own pursuit and goals for the sake of the whole.
Yeah.
E pluribus unum is the best thing that we have going for us. And if we invest in that and we push back against the more violent, the autocratic, the authoritarian version of this country that rests on white supremacy, if we don't internalize that and say, no, that's not what our country is. Our country is the people who, you know, fought for the Reconstruction Amendments. These are the people who, you know, went and helped support free Black people after the Civil War. These are the people who, when they poured into cities, like built communities with each other to keep each other safe and invested in making our country better and dreaming of what it could be possible. It's for the people who have protested pipelines. It is that is the same country and has the same value. And we can't let the people who run around with Confederate flags define that as our country. They betrayed it and we are the country. And that's just the truth. It's like we have Democratic majorities. We have a country where our rights in theory are secured. We need to fight for that and to remind them that they are angry because they are losing power, and it's our job to assert ours, you know, and be proud of when the American flag meant something positive. Because I gotta tell you, for people who were liberated from Manila, from people who were liberated in Nazi Germany, that flag meant something amazing. So we need to embody that America.
That's a beautiful note to end on. Yeah.
I will actually recommend our afternoon tea conversation with John King, who was Obama's Secretary of Education. He's now running for governor of Maryland. He really tells a story in particular that really embodies everything that you just said. So I highly recommend listening to him. He was wonderful.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. That's our show. Until the End of Democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Sammy Sage.
I'm Caitlin Berg.
And this is the Betches Sup Podcast.
The Betches Sup Podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Jorge Morales Pico, and Sean Kilby. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Be sure to follow @Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails to suppod@betches.com.
Betches.